Bible study. We're continuing our lesson on giving, our stewardship. And tonight we're going to talk about giving is the acid test. And it's my tradition, I like to go over a few verses to set our mindset for classes, for our class this evening. Proverbs 4:23, keep thine heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And of course, that points towards the four soils that are mentioned in Luke chapter 8. We pray that everyone has the fertile soil that's needed to allow God's word to grow within your heart. And a beautiful mindset from Paul from Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, things to concentrate on, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. And lastly, for the class here, our prayer, Psalms 139, 23, and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. What a beautiful thought there. Mr. Cody, would you open us up with a word of prayer? Thanks, Cody. What is an acid test? What is an acid test? Hold up, Ms. Carroll. It's a word that describes a noun. Okay. Thank you. You're married to a grammar guy, huh? There you go. What did someone say over here? Used to prove that something's real, like diamonds. A conclusive test of the success or value of something. A severe, crucial test. A sure test, giving an incontestable result. That's it. There shouldn't be anything left once you institute an acid test. How is giving? Thank you. Okay. Try it one more time. How is giving an acid test, or the acid test? Anyone? Shows how devoted you are? Anyone else? I'm sorry? Part of authenticating your faith. Give us a shot and see if it works for us. Not, we'll keep marching right on, and I'll just read to you guys a lot. So, and you guys are absolutely right. We're going to table that for a few seconds. Giving is the acid test, aren't an acid test. Let's talk about stewardship just for a second. What is a steward? Just generically speaking, what is a steward? A place of learning? Something. I think it might be something a little different. Steward.
Somebody that takes care of somebody else's stuff.
Somebody that takes care of somebody else's stuff. A manager. That's really what it comes down to. One who manages affairs of an estate on behalf of his employer. I'm a Lord of the Rings fan. I really like the books. the movies, and I can still sit and watch the books. Excuse me, the movies over and over and over. But the books, I love them to death. And one of the main nations there is Gondor. And they don't have a king, but they have a steward. The steward has the same authority to a certain degree of the king, but he is not the king. He is not the rightful king. So he's just setting in place, taking care of Gondor while the king is away, or waiting for the king to come back. That's essentially what we are from that standpoint, a steward. I just added a slide to my deck. Anyways, so in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 2, it states, "In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy." Self and substance make up a true stewardship. So we're going to cover 4 points from a steward perspective. The steward in his life, the steward of stewardship of time, stewardship of influence, stewards and money. Now, if you guys can recall pretty much what we've been covering since lesson one, it's been sort of the same thing, but different emphasis here and there. But one thing that's consistent, if you want to say, you're going to hear it at least 13 times this quarter, attitude and stewardship and the way that you do things. So let's get to the steward and his life. The starting point. What was Larry's lesson this past Sunday morning? I gave you guys a test last time, too. So what was Larry's lesson Sunday morning? Yeah, I was dozing, too. An invitation to... There you go. Invitation to die. So what's that? It was very impactful. Yeah. He said, "I noticed." And Gene said he wasn't here, so there's his excuse. So, an invitation to die. So, Larry talked about death is looked at differently from a Christian perspective, but he really harped upon the fact of dying to self. So, that's the key, the first step, is dying to self. The second step is acknowledging and understanding that you do not own your own life. You do not own your life. Let's go to Romans chapter 14, verse 8. Romans chapter 14 and verse 8. And Brian Newberry, read that for us whenever you get there. And someone else get Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. We belong to the Lord. If you have died to yourself, if you have put him on in baptism, you belong to him. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. I have been crucified with Christ. No longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. The idea of being crucified, are you dying? You've died to Christ. You've been crucified with Christ, and it's no longer Leslie that lives, is Christ. Whenever you see me, that's really what you should see. Not Leslie Smith anymore, but the Christ. Let's go to Psalms chapter 50, and someone read Psalms chapter 50, verses 10 and through 12. To him, and everything that's contained there belongs to God. Everything belongs to him, which includes us. God challenges us to a complete dedication of all we have and are, to be used in his kingdom with Christ as the director of his life, or our lives. Here's a key point that the author brought out. I can see no hope of any improvement in the world situation until individual Christians take their stewardship obligation seriously. I can see no hope of any improvement in the world situation until individual Christians take their stewardship obligation seriously. How many people believe that point? Yeah. And we're not talking about social change. That is a byproduct of Christians doing what they should be doing. We're talking about, what are we? We're the salt of the earth. We are the salt of the earth. We do our job. The earth will, the people in the earth will change. But we know what God has said. The path is narrow. And there's going to be very few who are going to find it and follow it. Stewards of time. Yes, Karen. She just gave us an example pointing back to the acid test itself. She's talking about whenever she runs tests and she takes the sample and dips it into the solution to see whether it's positive or negative. But if it's in the middle, it means absolutely nothing. And she equated that to being lukewarm. That's what you are, in the sense of you're nothing. God said he would spew you out of his mouth. Thank you for that point. Stewards of time. We don't own ourselves. Christians are, whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, none of us own time. Ezekiel 18:4 says, "Behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the Father as well as the soul of the Son is mine." He owns all souls. We don't own or control time, what I was saying a few seconds ago. Let's go to Psalms chapter 90, verse 12. And someone pick up Psalms chapter 34, verse 4. 90 and verse 12. And 39 and 4, please. We do not own time. We're just a vapor. While we're here, we're supposed to work. We're supposed to work while we're here. Time, tomorrow's not promised for any of us. Not promised for any of us. And we're supposed to work for the master. We're supposed to be wise stewards of our time because we don't own it. Stewards of influence. Romans 14:7 says, "For none of us lives for himself, and not one dies for himself." Our influence is supposed to be helpful and not hurtful. Because people are watching us. People are watching us. One of my children might do some, last name Smith. My boys go out and do something. They say, "Hey, man, that Smith family is this way or that way." They're going to judge the Smith family based on the way that they behave carrying the Smith name. Think about it from Christian perspective. The way we behave, we might be the only Christ that someone ever sees. And the way that they view that, that's stuck in their mind a lot of times. Ozzie.
Yeah,
Are they working to be idle? What are they preparing for? Winter. They're preparing. Thank you. They're preparing for winter. They're storing up for winter. They know it's this coming when they won't be able to get out and gather. Thank you, Ozzy. We tell you you're not an insect person. Yes. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. They are preparing. They're always working. Matthew chapter 5, verse 16 states, "Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." And Hebrews 10:24 states, "And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds." Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. That's the way we should be using our influence, to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. What's the next verse there? What's that, Jim? You know what? It's kind of hard to influence somebody when you're not around them. They were looking forward to that day coming, which is the Lord's Day, Sunday, so they could get together as a family, enjoy one another, help one another. It's an opportunity for us to, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. It's an opportunity to say, Larry, it's going to be okay. Cody? We find out what's going on in one another's lives. And Sunday's just not enough. It's got to be throughout the week. But these people are looking forward to that day when they could worship God. And it also gave them an opportunity to stimulate one another to love and to good deeds. And let us not forsake the assembly, which includes being here on Wednesday nights, another opportunity for us to gather so we can stimulate one another to love and good deeds. Matthew chapter 28. Someone go there for us, please. Matthew chapter 28 and verses 18 through 20. And this is about being a steward of the gospel. Terry, in verse 18, how much authority does he have? All. And it's been given to him in heaven and on earth. So he has the ability to tell us what we can and cannot do because he has all authority. So essentially, he was passing the torch, if you want to say, to us to do what? To do what? I'm sorry? Seek and save the lost. We are God's hands and feet and mouths here on the earth. We're it. Look around the room. Look around the globe. Whenever you travel somewhere and you go worship on a Sunday or Wednesday, wherever it happens to be, and you were God's people, that's it. That's it. And it's a wonderful thing to be around God's people, to see people, fellow laborers out there, understanding what you're dealing with. Some of the trials and tribulations that happen, the disappointment, I guess, if you want to say, whenever you see a family member not wanting to, or a coworker, or a friend, just not wanting to listen to what God has to say. We are the stewards of the gospel right now. We are charged with preserving and promoting the gospel. We're the ones with sharing God's word with the word with the world. Now remember, what's a steward again? Manager. A steward's chief desire should be to please his master. Christians are responsible, as I said a few minutes ago, for preserving and spreading the gospel. Stewards of money. This is our fourth point. Then we're going to get back to our acid test piece. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierce themselves with many griefs. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. Whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might, for there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you're going. Eventually, everybody's going to die, but while you're here, do everything you can with all of your might. Put all of your activity into what you're, your might into what you're doing. I brought these particular verses up to ask the question of, has God provided us with the talent to make money? Yeah. Is it wrong to earn as much money as what you can? Should you earn as much money as what you can? Why? The more you have, the more you give. There's nothing wrong with earning as much as what you can. Where does the problem come into play? Where your heart is. When you start loving it, you start loving money, you start longing for it. And it says, some of us have wandered away from the faith and pierced ourselves, it says themselves, with many griefs. The love of money will cause you pain, a lot of pain, a lot of pain. Sir? Yep, but that's what your brothers are here a lot of times to help you out. He said the lack of money will cause you pain too. But a lot of times that's where your brothers are here to help you out to get through that piece. Has God shared with us how to use his money? As Larry would say, nod your head this way. Yeah, thank you. How much of his money belongs to him? Yeah. We're going some more with the simple questions. Are we accountable to God for all of our income or just our offering? All of it. So you give 25% of your income, you can go blow the 75%. Oh, it finally showed up there. And you can go and blow the other 75% on whatever you want to do. You still pay your bills, take care of your family, and so on and so forth. That's what is there. Who is accountable to God once you've given your offering? Who is accountable for that money once it's been given to the church? What's that? Yeah, the eldership. It's not your part or our part to, well, it is to look after your brethren, if you want to say. That's one reason why the budget's posted back there, so everybody in this building can see how the money's being spent here. But at the end of the day, the eldership are the ones that are responsible for the way the money's spent. I'm going to answer two different ways, if you want to say. I'm looking at it as giving to the church, eldership, they're responsible, and also just someone out on the street. That's what we're going with. Okay. Is it wrong to continue to give if you know the elders are mismanaging the money? That was one question, number one, that essentially. The second one is if you see someone on the street and you know what they're going to do with it, is it wrong to give to them? With the first one. Am I your brother? Mm-hmm. So if you know I'm mismanaging something, I'm committing a sin, what would you do? Yeah. You owe it to me and I owe it to you guys to make sure that we're managing the money properly. Now, does that excuse you from giving? Yeah. The second piece. How much do you read into what somebody's doing? That's, to a certain degree, that's a case-by-case basis. There's not a hard and fast rule in my mind to say this, that, and another. But if I see the guy, preparing to go right over and buy him a whatever he's going to buy that's not, he shouldn't be buying, I have a problem with that. What I do with cases like that, hey, can I take you over to X, Y, and Z and get you something to eat, as opposed to just giving them money? Now, there are cases when I do just flat out give money. I agree. What Johnny just said is, you know, he talked about the deacons and their work. He said, you know, each deacon has his own challenges that they deal with. But he said he believes that Forrest has probably the hardest job or one of the hardest jobs here. And it's back to what Austin just said a few minutes ago as far as people coming in here asking for help. If anyone's ever worked back there, you can kind of feel when someone's trying to hustle you. And there are times you got to say, this is all you can get right now. And the force has set up some rules back there. You can only come once, four times a year, once a month, three times a year. Yeah. He has a set of rules back there. Are they hard and fast? There are times that there are people that come in here that really need some extra help. We help them out. So everything is a case-by-case basis, but we do have a set of rules for that. And Johnny is right. That is heartbreaking to be back there sometimes, and it's hard to say no to somebody whenever you're helping them out. I wasn't anticipating any of those questions, but anyways. Back to the acid test portion. I speak not by commandment, but I am testing the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. 2 Corinthians 8:8. Giving of our means is one of the greatest tests of a man's loyalty of Christ and his church. Thoughts on that? One, do you believe that's true? It shows where your treasure is. It shows where your heart is. It shows where your heart is. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. We're getting there too. We're getting there. Giving is the acid test. Giving is a test of our faith, and giving is a test of our love. Larry, would you take the time to read this, what you see on the screen? You're a fairly decent reader, aren't you? We need to talk about keeping this guy employed here. He said, do we want to read what's on the screen and read the right version? Read what's on the screen, please. Thank you. verses 19 through 24, what is being addressed there? Throwing up treasures in heaven. Anyone else? That's pretty bad. That's on point, Terry. No man can serve God and wealth. Store your treasures up in heaven. Go back to our next. He starts verse 25 with the mindset of, based on this, I say to you. What is his statement in verse 25? Trust about what? Specifically, what is he addressing there? Some of the things that they're talking about, that they're concerned, they're worried about. Worried about materials, material things and not the spiritual things. And he's talking, and they're concerned about what they're going to eat, what they're going to drink for the body, and what they're going to put on. What are people generally concerned about, according to verse 25? That's what we just talked about. Feeding themselves, housing themselves, and clothing. Should you worry about those things? Should you be concerned about those things? Should you take provisions to make sure that you can take care of those things? Yeah. Anybody who has children, does it bother you sometimes whenever your child comes to you, if you want to say, and they're looking at you over something that, as you can say, I got this, but they're sitting there really concerned about it. And you're like, baby, I'm going to take care of this. I'm the parent. In a sense of, God is saying, I'm going to take care of what you wear to a certain degree, the essentials of life. Why did he say that? Because he said, look at the birds of the air. What about them? I take care of them. The lilies of the field. I provide for them. How much greater are you guys? I'm going to take care of you. The focus is later on where he says, seek the kingdom of God first. What did Jesus say in verse 30? Whenever, after he finished that up, what did he say about their mindset? You have no faith, or little faith. Ye of little faith. Like what I just said, verses 32 brings the thought home, and 33 and 34 brings in the focus that we're talking about there. And this is also where I want to cut to the chase in verse 26, where it says, he said to them, why are you afraid, you men of little faith? Faith. He's going to take care of us. How is weak or little faith connected to giving? That's pretty much it. People are afraid to part with their money because they think they're going to need it next week. Sir? Widow's Mike, I'm sorry. I can't understand. What's? I'm sorry? Yes. She gave all she had. And she knew that God would take care of her. Great example. Thank you. I'm sorry, I couldn't understand what you were saying. Giving a test of our love. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, shall not perish, but have everlasting life. John 3:16. The adverb prior to the word love, so. Such a small word, but it modifies the verb there, love. It adds to it. It enhances it. It tells you a little more about how much he loves us. He so loved the world that he verbed gave. He so loved that he gave. He gave. And he gave. I want to stress that giving portion there. Love always gives. When love is applied, it will take different forms. You guys have seen this slide before, according to the needs of the encounter. When love comes to a legitimate need, it seeks to fulfill it. In the sense of love preaches when someone needs the gospel. Love provides food when someone needs, they're hungry. And love instructs when someone needs instruction. Love always gives. It always. This is a quote directly from the book. Several years ago, there was a man on the Gulf Coast making a good salary and giving less than one-tenth of his income to support what he believed was the truth. This is when he was in denominationalism. And once he became a Christian, he started giving less than 1% of his offering. Is this shocking? Why or why not? Is that shocking? Actually, I heard a sermon on that today. She said he might have had to give up his job to make less money. And a matter of fact, in this particular sermon, a man worked in a brewery at the time, and once he became a Christian, he said, I can no longer do this. And so he, but that was not the case. The brother observed the average. Paul is telling us how he read a book where it talked about, you know, and with the mindset of what would Jesus do. The brother just observed what was on the board and did the math and figured out how much the Christians were given. That's how he came to that conclusion of going from 10% to less than 1%. What was our influence that day or during that time frame? Now, a brother taught him properly and he started giving more abundantly. But what does that say about Christians? She said maybe he can't do math. But his math was not off, Jim. I like that one. Jim was talking about the congregation here at Cary, how we, whenever we went to apply, well, at the time, they, I guess it would be we now, applied for the loan to get the building built here, how the banker was saying that the average Christian church was given about 3%. But Jim, he shared with them that we'll be able to cover exactly what needs to be done from paying back our loan, and we've never missed a payment or anything of that nature. Jim. that's the opposite of the influence there, how we've influenced the banker's mindset with a contribution here at Cary. One last piece before we break, because I think the last bell has rang. Again, this is not to beat up the church here at Cary. Yeah, I like what Jim had to say, but there's still the idea of giving is something of your financial means is an individual responsibility. No one is going to know how much you're giving. And this is actually a plea to you out of love and not for the board, that if you're not giving to God the way that you should be, please do so, because it's not the right thing to do. It's not about the board. No one is going to come do an audit on you. Just do God's will. Thank you for your time.